Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you downloaded us from. Thanks very much for doing that. We have a wonderful guest for you today, a special friend of mine, David Katz, who has co-authored the book, How to Eat, All Your Food and Diet Questions Answered. And it's obviously available every place now, including on Amazon, and probably your local bookstore as well. This is podcast 990B. The B is always the guest segment. And as usual, we're brought to you by Persona Nutrition. If you're confused about vitamins, Persona experts cut through the hype and confusion. You can get supplements customized to your need. You visit mypersona.com and take the free online assessment. We're again talking, and I want to tell you, we're really fortunate because David Katz probably knows more about nutrition and has read and written more about the studies of nutrition than any living human being, and co-authored it with another expert who's a great writer, Mark Bittman. So, David, first, how did you and Mark get together?
Well, Mike, first of all, great to be with you. Thanks so much for having me. Those are very kind words. I can think of a few others who have read and written more than I, so you're too kind, but thank you. So Mark and I actually found one another through a bit of a disagreement. This was years ago. I love his writing. You know, he has this great view from altitude, looking at food systems and sustainability and the farm bill, and you know, very knowledgeable in areas where I'm less so. So I like his writing. I've always read and learned, but he was commenting on a particular epidemiologic study and made some interpretations of the study. And, you know, obviously he's not trained in epidemiology. And some of those conclusions were wrong, and it doesn't even really matter anymore what it was about. But I wrote him an email, said, I'm a fan, love your writing.
Well, it was about, wait a second, it was about butter, wasn't it?
Actually, no, we had a later round about butter. Now, this was actually a study that was looking at the contributions of sugar to obesity and diabetes, and it kind of wound up leading to the claim that obesity was not a risk factor, but sugar was. And the reality in the numbers, of course, is that both were risk factors, and sugar contributed to obesity and contributed to diabetes via that pathway. We later had a second round about butter being back and saturated fat. Anyway, the bottom line was when I wrote to him, you know, someone he didn't know personally and offered a critique, I mean, he was just incredibly gentlemanly. He was civil. The very thing you hope for, that people can disagree and discuss and learn from one another, that happened. And we started corresponding more routinely. He started asking me questions. I routinely asked him questions in areas where he knew more than I. And we became friends, you know, as pen pals. And we met in person, we shared a meal. And then the opportunity in the fullness of time came to write a couple of articles for New York Magazine. And they wound up sort of going viral. We did the last conversation you'll ever need to have about nutrition and health or some such thing. And as soon as they called it the last conversation and then it wound up being very popular, of course, they did a sequel. And then after we did those two, and they were very widely read, and we actually both wound up being nominated for a James Beard Foundation Award for that health journalism, we said, you know, we've got more to say. How about we do a book? And, you know, the rest is history.
And so let's get a couple things out of the way. How did you resolve the butter controversy? Is butter acceptable, unacceptable? Is it limiting? And first of all, tell us about what butter is. So since many people probably don't know, how do we get butter other than it comes from a cow through milk?
Right. It comes from a cow. And so basically it's a concentration of the fat of obtained from milk and that's churned a particular way to create the texture of butter. But, you know, essentially it's a concentrated source of dairy fat, just as cream is. They're just prepared slightly different ways. But, you know, a direct derivative of the fat in milk that is churned to make it thicken and to make it spreadable. And some of the commercial butter products have emulsifiers and other things added to them. But by and large, think of it as a mechanically processed, concentrated source of fat obtained from cow's milk, essentially. And where we landed, Mike, is, you know, it's kind of where you'd expect. Instead of what is the critical question that, you know, relates to almost every one of these issues that comes up with nutrition. What about eggs and what about fish and what about almost anything else you could list? Well, instead of what? So, you know, if you were to use butter rarely because you love it in the context of an overall excellent diet and it gave you a great deal of pleasure and you know, your intake of saturated fat was still relatively low because you weren't eating much else that provided it, you know, you'd say, well, that's kind of your call. But if the idea is you're going to eat butter to improve your health, you know, is butter back because saturated fat is good for you now? Absolutely no evidence of that. Would it be a good idea to replace extra virgin olive oil with butter? Absolutely not, because you know the evidence is very clear. Extra virgin olive oil is actually good for health. So, you know, confers benefits in terms of inflammation, in terms of blood lipids. There's no evidence of any health benefits whatsoever from butter. What's been claimed is that maybe it's neutral. But again, neutral compared to what? You know, if you're replacing bad forms of stick margarine, maybe it's neutral. But it's a downgrade from extra virgin olive oil. It's a downgrade from a diet low in saturated fat if it's putting you up over the threshold. So, you know, the conclusion is no, butter isn't back if you're looking for ways to improve your diet and improve your health. But if you're just thinking about overall, you know, pleasure from food, is there a place in your cooking for, you know, very judicious amounts of butter? We sort of struck a balance, Mike, between the fact that, you know, your diet ought to be good for you. It ought to be sustainable and good for the planet. But of course, Mark is a foodie. You know, he wrote How to Cook Everything. And he often brought that into the conversation. Well, you know, I mean, could a diet allow for a little bit of butter if it made the diet more palatable, more pleasurable for someone?
Then we
were talking about dose.
So let me go on another sphere. It doesn't have milk protein with it. So butter is without the protein, as I understand it. Is that right?
Concentrated milk fat, exactly.
More of You, the Owner's Manual, coming right up. But let's take a moment to talk about your health. Dr. Roizen will tell you that a common question he gets asked often is what vitamins he likes, what he recommends. Without knowing more about their needs, that question used to be almost impossible to answer. Now, however, it's easy. Go to personanutrition.com/Roizen and take your free assessment. It's a smart and easy way to get personalized supplement recommendations. The Persona assessment is backed by the latest nutritional research and the expertise of Persona's Medical Advisory Board, which consists of 8 nutritionists, a pharmacist, and 5 medical doctors, including Dr. Michael Roizen. All the latest scientific data and nutritional research put into one supplement program personalized for you. Just take the 5-minute assessment to get your free recommendations based on your goals, lifestyle, allergies, special diets, and prescription meds. Convenient vitamin packs are delivered to your door each month. Whether you want to sleep better, have more energy, or simply stay as young as you can, go to personanutrition.com/Roizen and get 50% off your order today. Half off now at personanutrition.com/Roizen. That's R-O-I-Z-E-N.
And one of the things that it looks to me, and one of the items, obviously it started here at the Cleveland Clinic, so I'm probably biased because of Stan Hazen's work, but that meaning one egg yolk, or more than 4 ounces of red meat, or milk protein, that is in cheese, in 6 ounces of the usual soft cheese, changes the bacteria inside your gut to produce a inflammatory substance called trimethylamine, which we convert so to make trimethylamine. Now, you seem to not put much credence in that, or am I misreading the book?
No, I think we value the production of TMAO, you know, as a marker for cardiovascular risk, and so we definitely, you know, we discuss the microbiome. I would say there are a couple of considerations here, Mike. One is that the overall dietary pattern seems to exert a major impact on the microbiome, the distribution of bacteria in the gut, which in turn determine whether or not we make a lot of TMAO. And then specific foods can contribute to the production of TMAO, which appears to raise cardiovascular risk independently of other things. And those foods are, you know, the very ones you know. So red meat, processed meat, to some extent fish, to some extent dairy. And it's interesting that fish is on that list, because fish usually turns up as something, you know, that non-vegans, non-vegetarians would think about as a healthy food for lowering cardiovascular risk. But again, I think it all comes back to issues of dose and issues of instead of what. So, you know, again, if you are willing to avoid these foods altogether, it's probably optimal. You know, there's no question that a plant exclusive diet where, you know, you're eating whole foods, minimally processed plants, vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans, lentils, nuts, and seeds, and drinking plain water when thirsty. And if you're going to use oil, extra virgin olive oil, organic expeller pressed canola oil, a couple of the best. Yeah, I mean, that, you know, avoiding everything else may be optimal, a little hard to say. On the other hand, you know, people who include small amounts of dairy, it's characteristic of the Mediterranean diet, for example, have excellent health outcomes. And so, you know, it may be that if you have the right diet to achieve a healthy microbiome, the occasional exposure to eggs or a small amount of meat or a small amount of dairy doesn't result in enough TMAO production to do you any harm. So, you know, again, I think the overall pattern is critical. And then within that context, you can ask questions about, you know, if I eat a little bit of this, what will it do? Will it hurt me? And I do look to the Mediterranean diet as a pretty clear indication that small amounts of these animal foods, you know, don't seem to result in harms, as long as the overall dietary pattern is, much as Michael Pollan recommended, food, not too much, mostly plants.
And so that's it, where it seems like the science is, and the book is, if you will, that is food, not too much, mostly plants. And as long as you're not excessive in any one characteristic, and that the what I would call the anti-inflammatory oils, the omega-3 and omega-9, or the canola oil, avocado, and extra virgin olive oil are the preferable ones. Is that where you come out?
Yeah, you know, I think we could definitely go deeper, Mike. Again, there are three considerations that matter to me. One is, you know, direct effects on human health. The other is the environmental impact, and then the third would be, you know, how we treat our fellow creatures. And you know, if you look through all three lenses, it definitely moves you in the direction of plant predominant or even plant exclusive. What used to be called a vegan diet is now more commonly called whole food, plant exclusive diet. And I think there's a strong argument there. I also think there's a strong argument for moving in that general direction, just because there are so many of us, 8 billion hungry Homo sapiens. The impact of our dietary patterns at scale on the environment, on ecosystems, on sea levels and climate and glaciers and biodiversity, these are huge considerations now, and they have to be addressed. But yes, you could argue that strictly from a human health perspective, you know, we've got blue zone populations, as our friend Dan Buettner writes about, you know, people who routinely live to be 100, who are vegan and vegetarian, who have low-fat Asian diets, who have high-fat Mediterranean diets. What they all have in common is an emphasis on real foods, plant predominance, lots of vegetables, fruits, whole grains, legumes, nuts and seeds, you know, avoidance of highly processed foods, a minimal emphasis on animal foods, and that would include meat and dairy and eggs. These are consistent across all those different dietary types, but it's nice, I think, to be able to describe to people a wide array of diets that are variants on that theme of wholesome, whole food, plant predominant, sensible, balanced assembly, time honored. Because what it means is, you know, there are choices to make. There are choices that you can make based on what you like, based on what your family likes, based on your culture and ethnicity and traditions. And you know, I think nobody wants to be told exactly what they have to eat. People need guidance to make healthy choices, but I think it's really nice to put people in the driver's seat and say, you've got a range of options here. So we discuss them all in the book, and you know, we conclude there is no single best diet, but there's absolutely a theme, and all of the best diets are variants on that common theme.
Now, let me go and ask you a couple questions that we got asked when we tweeted that you were going to be on. One is,
sure,
is there, if I'm going to have 9 servings of fruit and vegetables a day, does it matter whether they're mostly fruit or mostly vegetable? And is there a hazard from the sugar in fruit?
So I think it does matter that it be a balanced assembly. You know, one of the things we've long talked about nutrition is variety. You know, frankly, a variety of processed foods can get you into trouble, but a variety of fruits and vegetables means you're sourcing a lot of nutrients that do different things. Sometimes we know the exact function, sometimes we don't. But, you know, even if we just think about antioxidants, everybody's heard that antioxidants are valuable and important. Well, there are thousands and thousands of them, mostly grouped in 2 major families, bioflavonoids and carotenoids. And they vary markedly in a wide array of fruits, a wide array of vegetables. They're quite distinct. Another thing that often varies between fruits and vegetables is fiber. Some are concentrated sources of insoluble fiber. Some are concentrated sources of soluble fiber. Insoluble fiber works its magic in the GI tract, and soluble fiber exerts a greater effect on what actually happens in the bloodstream. So there's a strong argument for striking a balance between the two and getting a variety of both. And in terms of the sugar, no. There's really no evidence that the sugar native to whole fruit does harm. You know, the harm you'd worry about would be, well, sugar is calories and it will make me gain weight. People who eat more whole fruits actually tend to be leaner. And then the bigger concern is sugar is putting me at risk for diabetes. Really good evidence in the work of Frank Hugh at Harvard, among others, showing actually that eating a variety of whole fruits routinely lowers your risk of diabetes. So, you know, I would say you don't really want to be substituting fruits for vegetables or vegetables for fruits as a matter of routine. It doesn't really matter if you do it on any given day. Over time, aim for a balance between the two. But no, if you're eating whole fruit, generally the sugar is not going to be a problem. Rather the contrary, eating whole fruit is good for you.
We've been talking with Dr. David Katz, co-author of How to Eat, All Your Food and Diet Questions Answered. As you can tell, David and his co-author, Mark Bittman, have a B-I-T-T-M-A-N, I should say, and the key of the book is How to Eat, are, in fact, really pros at the science and, as you can tell, at writing it in a comprehensive and compelling way. David, thanks very much. The time is too short. Always when I get to talk to you, you have such great knowledge. For those of you who are listening, obviously you can, if you will, soak or drain in that knowledge or soak in that knowledge and enthuse in it the way I do by getting the book, How to Eat, All Your Food and Diet Questions Answered, Bittman and Katz, K-A-T-Z, Mark Bittman's last name, B-I-T-T-M-A-N. This is podcast 990B of You, the Owner's Manual. Thanks for downloading us. Our sponsor is, as usual, Persona Nutrition. Now you can get daily vitamin packs personalized for you. Can you imagine that? Personalized. Our sponsor, Persona Nutrition, you can get your personalized supplements the way I do too from Persona Nutrition. You can take the free online assessment and get your recommendations at mypersona.com. And you heard a really great, what I would call set of answers to the questions that some of you posed and some I came up with. But this book, How to Eat, All Your Food and Diet Questions Answered, really does do that. He goes over intermittent fasting. He does go over, if you will, omnivore versus carnivore versus vegetarian versus vegan. He goes over who should, in fact, they go over, I should say, grains and different grains. And it's really a really superbly written and comprehensive book. David, thanks very much. Joe, thanks for great engineering. And especially to our listeners, you, thank you for downloading us. We'll be back next week. The A's are always the news of the week and what it means for you. The B's, wonderful guests like David Katz. Next week, Bumsko Han from Purdue University talking about the pancreatic cancer time machine. And you're going to want to listen to that as well. Thanks again.